네.
네. This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Japan's prime minister is offering Ukraine support as China's Xi backs Russia. We'll get more details from AP correspondent Sagar Magani. And some Ukrainian soldiers have nearly finished Patriot missile training, AP's Norman Hall reporting.
Journalists invited by the Army have seen dozens of Ukrainian soldiers conduct training exercises in a southwest Oklahoma prairie at Fort Sill Army Post. Since January, 65 Ukrainians have been taught how to use the Patriot missile system, which can track and shoot down enemy missiles. The system, which hasn't yet been deployed in Ukraine, is particularly useful for defending population centers and critical infrastructure. The trainees are expected to leave Oklahoma the next several days for additional training in Europe before they deploy to Ukraine. I'm Norman Hall.
Meanwhile, the Pentagon says that it is speeding up its delivery of Abrams tanks to Ukraine, opting to send a refurbished older model that can be ready faster. The aim is to get the 70-ton battle powerhouses to the Russia-Ukraine war zone by the fall. The original plan was to send 31 newer M1A2 Abrams, which could have taken a year or two to build and ship. But the Pentagon said on Tuesday that a decision was made to send the older M1A1 version, which can be taken from Army stocks and will be easier for Ukrainian forces to learn to use and maintain. Again, the Pentagon says it is speeding up its delivery of Abrams tanks to Ukraine, while two of Asia's rivals are engaging in dueling diplomacy over Russia's invasion. This is VOA News. The U.S. is trying to tap in any anger from China over an upcoming stopover by Taiwan's leader. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reporting.
Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen is tentatively scheduled to transit through New York on March 30th before heading to Guatemala and Belize. She's expected to stop in Los Angeles on April 5th on her way back to Taiwan. Following an August visit by then-House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Beijing launched missiles over Taiwan, deployed warships across the median line of the Taiwan Strait, and carried out military exercises near the island. Beijing also suspended climate talks with the U.S., and restricted military-to-military communication with the Pentagon. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said that the planned stopovers are business as usual and consistent with longstanding U.S. policy.
That is AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reporting. The United States is imposing a new round of sanctions on Iranian firms and people accused of procuring equipment used for Iranian drones. U.S. Treasury officials announced the new measures. The Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control coordinated with the FBI to designate four firms and three people in Iran and Turkey for allegedly buying equipment, including European-made engines of drones to be used for Iran's drone and weapons programs. American defense officials claimed that Iran is supplying Russia with unmanned drones to use on civilians as the Kremlin continues its invasion of Ukraine. U.S. officials also say that Iran is gathering information for its drone network by deploying its technology in Ukraine. A man gets a four-year prison sentence for attacking police during the Capitol riot. AP's Ed Donahue.
Prosecutors say Jeffrey Sills from Virginia arrived with a gas mask and goggles, stole a flashing strobe light to disorient officers, and assaulted them with a stolen baton at the Capitol's Lower West Terrace Tunnel. Sills' attorney says his client did not come to Washington with the intention of committing violence. He brought technical gear out of fear there was going to be a terrorist attack. But prosecutors say Sills posted video, later deleted. In one post showing officers in riot gear, Sills wrote, "Visited the Capitol today." In another post showing rioters flooding into the tunnel, he wrote, "Took a tour." Ed Donahue, Washington.
French garbage collectors, refinery workers, and others are striking again, continually being angry about President Emmanuel Macron's decision to force a divisive bill raising retirement age from 62 to 64 through without a parliamentary vote. Paris police said Tuesday that 234 people were arrested overnight in the capital, mostly for setting fire to garbage in the streets. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, March 22nd. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Japan's leader makes a surprise visit to Ukraine as the U.S. speeds up the delivery of elite tanks.
Officials tell the AP the Pentagon will instead send a refurbished older model already in Army stocks. They'll be easier for Ukrainian troops to learn to use and maintain.
The UN reports an outbreak of cholera following a deadly cyclone in Mozambique.
The health director in Mozambique's Zambezia province, the area west hit by the cyclone, told State Radio Mozambique Monday night they are scrambling to cope with the rising numbers of cholera patients.
And several people are reported dead as magnitude 6.5 earthquake rattles Pakistan and Afghanistan. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida has made a surprise visit to Kyiv and met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The trip stole some of the global attention from Asian rival President Xi Jinping of China, who was in Moscow to bolster Russia against the West over the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine. The two visits highlighted the nearly 13-month-old war's repercussions for international diplomacy as countries line up behind Moscow or Kyiv. This as the U.S. is speeding up its delivery of Abrams tanks to Ukraine. Associated Press correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The original plan was to send newer versions of the Abrams, which could have taken a year or two to build and ship. Officials tell the AP the Pentagon will instead send a refurbished older model already in Army stocks. They'll be easier for Ukrainian troops to learn to use and maintain, and could arrive in the war zone much sooner, with the goal being 8 to 10 months. Ukrainian leaders had been pushing for the Abrams, a battlefield workhorse, for more than three decades. The Biden administration insisted for months the tanks were too complicated to maintain and repair, but then announced in January it would send them. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Russia's ambassador to Australia says Australians have been, quote, brainwashed, unquote, into supporting Ukraine. Alexei Pavlovsky also accused the International Criminal Court of bias after it issued an arrest warrant for President Vladimir Putin. Phil Mercer reports.
Members of the Australian-Ukrainian community will protest Tuesday in Canberra against Russia's upcoming presidency of the UN Security Council. Rally organisers said in a statement that for the first time in world history, an aggressor and state sponsor of terrorism will be the president of the Security Council. Russia's ambassador to Australia, Alexei Pavlovsky, believes support for Ukraine in Australia is misguided. He claims the Russian public has been brainwashed and has ignored Russia's motives for invading Ukraine. Authorities in Moscow have said they intended to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine. Pavlovsky has also condemned as biased allegations made by the International Criminal Court, or ICC, that Russian President Vladimir Putin has committed war crimes in Ukraine. A warrant for Putin's arrest has been issued. The allegations focus on the deportation of Ukrainian children from occupied areas of Ukraine. Authorities in Moscow have denied the allegations and denounced the arrest warrant as outrageous. Pavlovsky told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Monday that the ICC investigation was one-sided and prejudiced.
First of all, I would like to see these reports. From what I have seen so far, I gather that the bodies you are referring to are more than biased. They have a tunnel vision. They choose not to notice the ample evidence of the war crimes committed by the Ukrainian side. So my point is that any investigation should be unbiased.
Russia is not an ICC member country, and the Hague-based court has no authority there. But President Putin could be arrested should he travel to any of the ICC's 123 member states. Australia has committed $680,000 and three staff members to support the International Criminal Court investigation into alleged Russian war crimes. Canberra is also the largest non-NATO contributor to Kyiv's war effort, supplying missiles and armoured personnel carriers. Since the invasion began more than a year ago, Australia has imposed sanctions on hundreds of Russian politicians, including President Putin, military commanders and business people. They are the most sweeping penalties Australia has ever placed on another country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you, Phil. And as tensions rise in Pakistan over terrorism charges slammed on former Prime Minister Imran Khan and dozens of his supporters, the advocacy group Human Rights Watch has called on the government to drop the case. The global rights organization accused Pakistani police of using, quote, abusive measures, unquote, in an escalating confrontation with Khan's supporters amid a worsening political environment within the nuclear-armed country. Analysts have expressed skepticism that the government will dismiss the charges. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gal.
It's rare for the Human Rights Watch to have come out with this call for the Pakistani authorities to drop these terrorism charges. And I'm saying this is rare because the government has been going after former Prime Minister Imran Khan's party for quite some time, cracking down on its workers, arresting them, and then charging them with terrorism and other serious criminal offenses. It seems that this excessive use of anti-terrorism law in Pakistan that was actually meant to counter militancy and terrorist groups has finally basically drawn attention of human rights groups domestically and internationally. And they are making calls, obviously, that political activists should not be treated like terrorists. Whether the government will drop these charges, it's not clear because the government on its part seems determined to go ahead, and even they are calling now for declaring the former Prime Minister Imran Khan's political party as a militant or banned organization. We know that tomorrow on Wednesday, a special joint session of the parliament has been convened to apparently discuss how to outlaw this political party, which is the largest political party in Pakistan.
Aside from the terrorism charges, former Prime Minister Khan faces a myriad of other legal issues. He was in court today, Tuesday. Can you tell us why he was in court and what was the outcome?
Imran Khan has been facing more than 90 legal challenges ever since he was removed from power last April. His appearance in court today was, in fact, in connection with the two latest cases registered against him by the authorities on charges of terrorism, and those charges stem from last week's protests in Islamabad, here in the capital, where he was due to appear before a court to face charges of corruption. But thousands of his supporters, as usual, gathered outside the court, and ultimately police had to fire tear gas and rubber bullets to disperse the crowd. And in the process, obviously, then protesters, they were large, very large in numbers. So they retaliated by attacking police with sticks and stones. And what happened at the end of these protests, police registered fresh cases against Imran Khan and his party leaders and activists, once again under this anti-terrorism law. So these were the two cases for which he had to appear in a court today to seek protective bail, because had he not succeeded in securing the protective bail in the court today, the government or police would have arrested him any time.
That's VOA's Ayaz Gal speaking with me from Islamabad. Ethiopia's government has rejected a U.S. assertion that all sides in the two-year Tigray war committed war crimes, citing the statement, quote, inflammatory, unquote. Maya Masakel reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Monday on Twitter that the Ethiopian and Eritrean armies, Amhara region forces, and Tigray People's Liberation Front forces all committed atrocity crimes during the Tigray War that ended in November. Blinken said he condemns these atrocities and welcomes commitments to pursue transitional justice. Ethiopia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs struck back in a statement Tuesday, saying it rejects the U.S. allegation that all sides committed war crimes during the Tigray conflict. It said Blinken's statement, coming a week after the Secretary of State visited Ethiopia, unfairly proportions blame and is inflammatory and untimely. The government said it has just launched national consultations on a transitional justice policy. The ministry added that a report on human rights released by the U.S. State Department on Monday does not contain any information that wasn't included in a previous joint report done by the UN and Ethiopia's Human Rights Commission. In a separate report released by the UN last September, investigators had found evidence of crimes against humanity by the Ethiopian government, including using starvation as a weapon. The government rejected that report. Maya Msikir for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
This year's World Water Day on Wednesday is about accelerating change to solve water and sanitation crisis. With much of the world grappling with a shortage of clean drinking water, a French company has developed an autonomous robot that's helping to better maintain and preserve existing water supplies. VOA's Julie Tabor has more.
Robot may one day transform the way we think about water preservation. When placed inside a water pipe, it easily moves through the system without disrupting water flow to collect and transmit key data about the condition of the pipes. Jean-François Guider-Donny is one of the co-founders of the French firm Aqua Robotics. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
We are able to capture a very large set of data on a single mission and really give an exhaustive view of the condition of the asset.
The robot, called the Clean Water Pathfinder, is equipped with a high-resolution camera and ultrasonic sensors, which allow it to pinpoint the exact location of the pipe and detect corrosion, microcracks, and general wear and tear. It was created by a French startup to help water utility companies identify where and when to repair or replace pipes, reducing leaks and costs.
We've got an estimated about 40 million kilometers of water distribution network throughout the world, and renewing just a single kilometer costs between 150 to 800,000 euro per kilometer. So that information we're bringing them is extremely precious.
Optimizing existing water networks is especially important now, as global demand for this precious natural resource continues to rise. A recent UN report predicts that demand for water will exceed supply by 40% in 2030. Kimberly Shonick is the water program director for the Nature Conservancy in Arizona. She spoke with VOA via Skype.
And so that kind of technology is really important in reducing loss in the system and making sure that water companies aren't pumping and delivering water that's not going to customers and then is lost to the system.
Once it goes through its pilot phase in France, the company plans to distribute the Pathfinder to other areas of the world. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
In other news, a magnitude 6.5 earthquake has rattled much of Pakistan and Afghanistan, sending panicked residents fleeing from their homes and offices. At least 9 people died and dozens were injured in northwest Pakistan from Tuesday's quake. It was centered in Afghanistan and also felt bordering in Tajikistan. The tremor sent many people fleeing their homes and offices in Pakistan's capital of Islamabad, some reciting verses from the Quran, Islam's holy book. The scene was repeated in Kabul and other parts of Afghanistan. The U.S. Geological Survey said the center of the magnitude quake was located 40 kilometers south-south of Jhelum in Afghanistan's mountainous Hindu Kush region, bordering Pakistan and Tajikistan. The UN's Children's Agency, UNICEF, says nearly 100,000 cholera cases have been reported in Mozambique, more than tripling since early February, with more than a dozen dead. Officials fear the death toll after Cyclone Freddy will continue to jump as thousands of displaced are living in overcrowded shelters. Charles Maguiro reports from Maputo, Mozambique.
The health director in Mozambique's Zambezia province, the area west hit by the cyclone, told State Radio Mozambique Monday night they are scrambling to cope with the rising numbers of cholera patients. Blighton Caetano said nearly 200 patients were being treated for the bacterial disease in the provincial capital, Kilimani, where 50,000 people are crowded into temporary shelters. He says they have recruited and hired 116 health technicians, including doctors, nurses, service agents and drivers, to cope with the demand in Kilimani City. Caetano says they are working with 2 cholera treatment centers and are preparing to open a third. In a media statement Monday, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, said millions of children were at risk in the aftermath of the record cyclone. Cyclone Freddy killed hundreds in Madagascar, Malawi, and Mozambique since first making landfall in February and displaced hundreds of thousands. Malawi was already suffering a record cholera outbreak with nearly 1,700 deaths in the past year from the diarrheal disease spread by dirty water, most of them children. UNICEF's statement notes that Mozambique has 2 million people in need of food and other aid in the country's northern region. UNICEF said the situation for children is set to worsen if aid doesn't arrive quickly, saying malnutrition increases the risk from diseases like cholera. It said as of March 18, there were nearly 10,000 cholera cases reported in 35 districts in Mozambique, more than tripling since early February. UNICEF head of office in Zambezia province, Michael Chimeza, told Radio Mozambique Tuesday they provided 10,000 water purification bottles and nearly 5,000 hygiene kits. He says they will increase these numbers even more with the trucks of supplies that are arriving in few days. Chimeza says they made this delivery now to support the government response and try to stop the cholera outbreak. UNICEF is calling for $155 million to respond to the impacts of the flooding and cholera on children and families. Cyclone Freddy made landfall twice in Mozambique and is believed to be the longest-lasting such tropical storm to hit Southern Africa in decades. Charles Mangwiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
French medical aid group Doctors Without Borders has launched the first human papillomavirus vaccine drive for schoolgirls in Malawi. The aim is to reduce cervical cancer in the country, which has the world's second highest death rate from the disease. Lamek Masina reports from Machinga District in Malawi.
Malawi rolled out its national human papillomavirus vaccination campaign in 2019, targeting 1.5 million girls aged 9 to 14 to prevent cervical cancer. But the COVID pandemic quickly disrupted the HPV vaccine drive, with shifting medical priorities and social distancing. Medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, known by its French abbreviation, MSF, this year launched a campaign to boost the low vaccine uptake by targeting girls at school. Robert Welemu is medical coordinator for Doctors Without Borders in Malawi.
It's easier to find this age group in schools than in a community. And at the school, we have the Minister of Education, which works hand-in-hand with the Minister of Health. And it's easier to explain or to advocate, to mobilize these children to get to understand what is an HPV and how can they prevent it, mostly in line of a vaccine.
MSF says since January, they vaccinated about 65,000 girls in 300 schools. MSF says Malawi has the world's second largest death rate from the disease, seven times the global average, with thousands dying every year. Before getting vaccinated, girls are also taught about the disease. Pegen Kwezalamba is a health surveillance assistant in Malawi's Machinga District.
Health education has helped us to prepare the girls for the vaccine and to make them decide what to do on their own. As such, a lot of girls between 9 and 14 years of age volunteered to get the jabs. Some were even asking us to vaccinate them before they get consent from their parents.
Malawi in 2020 destroyed 20,000 expired doses of COVID-19 vaccines because of low uptake over myths and misunderstandings. The HPV vaccine faced the same resistance as some parents refused consent, says Nkwezalamba.
Their fear was that they suspected that we were vaccinating their children to make them infertile. Some suspected that we want to vaccinate their children against COVID-19 and that we have just changed the appearance of COVID-19 doses.
Malawi health officials say meetings with village chiefs and parents helped debunk those myths, and the vaccination rate has soared in the MSF drive. Alfred Piri is the chief preventive health officer for Machinga District.
Which this support can be normalized also, so that MSF can support us each and every time when we need to have this support on the HPV.
MSF says if there are no more disruptions, they'll keep up vaccinations to try to bring down Malawi's high death rate and maybe even one day stop cervical cancer. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Machinga District, Malawi.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter, a roundup of issues dominating the U.S. political landscape, from a possible indictment against former President Donald Trump to the contours of the Republican primary as potential candidates vie for an opportunity to challenge Democratic President Joe Biden in 2024. Veteran political analysts weigh in on these and other domestic stories next on the U.S. Politics edition of Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news. Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week, for the 5-minute VOA newscast. We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the world. Give us 5 minutes, and we'll give you the world. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu from Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
March 22nd is World Water Day, highlighting the importance of clean water, sanitation, and the need for sustainable management of fresh water resources. This year's theme, Accelerating Change to Solve the Global Water and Sanitation Crisis, underlines the fact that time is running out on the 6th United Nations Sustainable Development Goal. In a recent tweet, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the world is woefully off course to achieve our goal of water and sanitation for all by 2030. Billions of people still don't have safe water and toilets. Indeed, today, about a quarter of the global population does not have safely managed drinking water services, according to the World Health Organization's State of the World's Drinking Water Report. This means that over 2 billion people worldwide have no access to clean, fresh drinking water or proper sanitation. Dysfunction throughout the water cycle is undermining progress on all major global issues, from health to hunger, gender equality to jobs, education to industry, disasters to peace, said the World Health Organization last October. The fact is that investments in water security, sanitation, and hygiene are critical for progress in nearly all aspects of global development. However, at the most basic level, this is not just about progress. It is about saving and improving lives. Every year, around 830,000 people die of water-related diarrheal illnesses. Many, if not most of them, are children under the age of 5. With reliable access to safe water and sanitation, nearly all of these deaths could have been prevented. For its part, the United States in October released its Global Water Strategy for the 5-year period beginning with the fiscal year 2023. Working through the U.S. Agency for International Development, the United States government designated 22 high-priority countries as the primary focus for building a more water-secure world amid ongoing challenges. The United States hopes to meet its 5-year goal of directly ensuring that 22 million people gain access to water services and 22 million people gain access to sanitation services, half of them people who have never before had these services. Our world is more interconnected and interdependent than ever before, said Vice President Kamala Harris. Water scarcity is a global problem, and it must be met with a global solution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.